Good evening. Thank you so much for being here tonight. You are our honored guests, and we are excited to have you guys. And also thank you to everyone else who's here, who I see more often on Sunday nights. This is an exciting day. And again, I want to thank you for being here. I want to thank Andrew for my new shirt. I like it, and so I feel a little different up here wearing this than what I normally wear, but I like it. I can get used to this. I want to say I'm thankful for this topic that we were given. I like the theme, and I love the movie Toy Story. When I think of Toy Story, it is one of the most nostalgic movies for me, particularly the first one, because that one I watched a lot when I was a kid. And it was, I can quote vast portions of it, and a lot of people have heard me do that, and I'm not going to do that right now, but trust me, it can happen. And it cracks me up, and there's a lot of good things about that movie. But here is a point relevant for our lesson tonight. Our lesson tonight is going to come out of the Gospel of John, and it is entitled, You Have a Friend in Me. But when you watch the movie Toy Story, again, particularly the first one, and if you haven't seen Toy Story, well, that's on you. You've had plenty of time to see Toy Story, so hopefully you can follow this lesson. But particularly the first one, you have Woody, great cowboy, and he has a great relationship with Andy, who is like the kid who plays with the toy, and Woody's the toy. And then whenever Andy leaves, like the toys, hey, have their own lives. And as long as everything is good in his world, as long as he's the special one, as long as Andy favors him, Woody is good. You know, he's a pretty nice guy as long as everything is going his way. He will treat the other ones, you know, well, the other toys well, as long as he's number one. But something happens and it devastates him. And it's actually the way they film the transformation of Andy switching from cowboy to space ranger when he gets this new toy, Buzz Lightyear. It is heart-wrenching. I mean, like you see Woody and he used to sleep on the bed and then he ends up under the bed early on. And then he ends up in the trunk. And not only that, but it's like the bedding, it turns from cowboy into space ranger. And all the pictures Andy has on the wall, they turn from cowboy to space ranger. And like Woody's whole world is crumbling. His identity was the fact that he got special treatment from Andy. And yet here this new punk in a rocket, as he says, comes and now all of a sudden some strange things are happening to me. So things get really strange and sad for Woody. But here's what I think we can see in Woody. He's not a particularly good friend. He's an all right guy as long as everything's going his way. But you come to realize he's pretty prideful, right? You come to realize he's kind of selfish. You come to realize that he suffers a lot with jealousy. Like when he's not getting what he thinks he deserves, that tears him up and he craves. He's not happy for the other toys getting more playing time. He's not for playtime. He's not happy for Buzz Lightyear. He's not happy for Andy having a new great favorite. Like you would think he would care about Andy's happiness, but no. He seems to focus a whole lot on his own. And to the extent that there's a night, they're going to go to Pizza Planet. And he gets to only bring one toy, and he gets RC, and he tries to knock Buzz Lightyear behind a desk so that Andy won't be able to find him. So like, he actually tries to harm the other toy. The thing gets out of control. He ends up knocking him out the window. Everyone turns against him. The movie turns into a fiasco. It's a great movie. But all of that is to say this. In that story, you get an example of someone who, as long as everything was going their way, he was a great guy to be around. But as soon as difficulty entered, you come to realize he's prideful, he's selfish, he gets jealous, he turns against other people, he tries to harm someone else, like all of that stuff, he's not actually a very good friend. And the sad reality in the world that we live in is sometimes that happens with our friends. Sometimes that happens with people where you think you know someone and you think that you have a good friendship and a good relationship with somebody, but then circumstances change and you come to realize maybe it wasn't actually me that they loved so much. You know, they talk about when everything goes wrong in your life is when you find out who your true friends are, the people who will stick with you through those things, the people who will continue to be patient and loving and kind, the people who you will be patient and loving and kind with. Like, friendship matters. I think of when you think of all the gifts that God has given us in the world, friendship has to be up there near the top. deep, meaningful, good relationships that endure hardship, that are where they're not designed to get anything out of, but you just enjoy one another. Like, that's a powerful thing, and it's a good thing, and it's something that I think we should take seriously, and it's something I think Jesus took seriously. Jesus didn't have a wife. He didn't have kids, but he had good friends, and I think Jesus had a meaningful life because of that. I think friendships are some of the most powerful and meaning relationships that you can have in your life. And Jesus says some interesting things about friendship. He says some interesting things to his disciples about how meaningful friendship is. And if you have your Bibles, let's read this is from the Gospel of John, chapter 15. I'm going to read verses 12 through 17, and then we're going to talk a little bit about what it means to be friends with Jesus, but more than that, how we can be that Jesus type of friend to others. But this is John chapter 15 and verse 12. Being friends with Jesus is kind of weird. And hopefully we'll see that as we look. It's great. You want to be friends with Jesus. But it's not like any other friendship you're going to have. And there's a couple of reasons why. But this is John chapter 15 and verse 12. Jesus says, "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no man than this, than he would lay down his life for his friends." And then notice verse 14. Hold on to this verse for a second. "You are my friends if you do what I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know that what the master is doing, but I have called you friends. For all that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should abide, so that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give it to you. These things I command you, that you will love one another." And so there's actually a ton in that short little paragraph right there. And there's a lot in there that connects to pretty much everything else that's in the Gospel of John. There's a lot of key ideas right there. But I do want you to think about that phrase with respect to friendship. When Jesus says, "You are my friends if you do what I command you." Try that at school sometime. Try that at work. You know, go to the lunchroom, sit down next to someone and say, like, "Hi, I'm Travis. Tell you what, you want to be my friend? I'll be your friend if you do anything that I say." That's not a good foundation for what we typically think of as a friendship. Friendship is something like among equals and among peers. Well, friendship with Jesus is not like that. Friendship with Jesus is not a friendship among equals and peers. There is something different and special and unique about the friendship with Jesus. As a matter of fact, when you do a study on the concept of friendship, or at least some of the words that are used for friendship in the Bible, you see that there's quite a wide range of usage, and it's not often what we think of as a good buddy that I want to go camping and eat s'mores with and tell stories. Like, the buddy, that's a great thing to have, but that's not actually, I think, the main point of what Jesus is saying here. The word friendship is often used to describe like an alliance between people, people becoming partners with one another in something. So here's an example. There was, before the time of Jesus, a couple hundred years before, there's actually some books that the Jews have written called 1st and 2nd Maccabees. And they're kind of interesting books. They talk about some of the political stuff taking place in Israel before the time of Jesus. But one of the things that was happening is you had these Greek oppressors who had made laws against a lot of the Jewish practices, to the extent that if they didn't keep these laws, they would kill them. Like, they actually would kill them for trying to honor Sabbath, circumcise their children, eat kosher, like eat the, according to the Jewish food laws. They went to the temple, and they turned it into a temple for Zeus. They appointed a guy named Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes. He appointed his own high priest in Israel, like who was going to be the high priest. It was a guy named Jason. Then he chose a guy named Menelaus instead. And anyway, it caused a bunch of problems, obviously. They built a Greek gymnasium there. Basically, the goal was, we're going to force these guys to be Greeks. That way we can have everyone agreed and on the same page. They should worship our gods, eat our foods, act like us. And the Jews had too many odd, unique, specific things. So they wanted to get rid of that. So that was taking place. And some of the Jews actually rose up and said, "No, we're not going to do this." There's a guy named Mattathias, and then his son, like Judas Maccabees. They rose up, and they actually started a violent revolt against the Greeks. They went to war with them. Have you heard of Hanukkah? Hanukkah is a Jewish celebration where they celebrate their victory. And when they went back to the temple and they rededicated it to Yahweh, to the God of Israel, and got the Greek gods out of there, that's what they're remembering and celebrating when they celebrate Hanukkah. But anyway, this was happening before the time of Jesus. But there was an issue that arose. It's hard to overthrow the Greek Empire. And one of the things that the Jews wanted was help in this. And so one of the things that they decided to do was send some emissaries to a place. It ends up becoming really, really important, called Rome. And they asked Rome for help against the Greeks. And what's going to end up happening is Rome will end up being very helpful to them. In fact, they'll end up building roads for them. They'll end up reconstructing their temple for them. They'll give them protection from enemies, but they will charge them unbearable taxes, and they will end up becoming the new oppressors. And so once you switch from one oppressor to another, but do you know the word that they use over and over again in the books of Maccabees to talk about their relationship with Rome? Friends. We want to be friends with you guys. Hey guys, how about we pay you tribute and you help us out and we become friends? Why? What does that word friends mean in that context? It doesn't mean that they went out camping and had s'mores with the Romans. It means that they entered into a partnership, an alliance with one another, where they were going to try to share a lot of the same goals. They were going to help each other out. They were going to do things that were mutually beneficial to each other, right? But it was an alliance and a friendship. You see, I think, a similar usage in the Gospel of Luke. When Jesus is on trial before Pilate, he ends up getting sent to Herod. And then after Herod talks with him, he sends him back to Pilate. And so Pilate and Herod were two different political figures, and they seemingly hadn't gotten along very well. But it says after this, they became friends. What does that mean? I don't know that they had movie nights and popcorn, but I think they had an agreement, an alliance with one another. They ended up working together in a better way. And I think that is helpful for understanding what it means to be friends with Jesus. I do think that there is emotion and love attached to it. So don't say that I'm not trying to say that that's not involved. But I think that, you know, the fact that we're family with Jesus has a lot to do with that. And the fact that he loves us and all of that, that's part of it too. Like, it's not friendship without love. But I do think when you say, "You're my friends if you do what I command you," it does help us recognize this is a type of friendship that's not among equals here. In fact, John wants us to know very clearly, it's not a friendship with equals. Jesus is not our equal. Jesus is the creator of the cosmos in the very first verses of the Gospel of John. He is the Word who was with God and was God, and all things came into being through him. And without him, nothing came into being that came into being. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together is how Paul describes it. Like, Jesus is not equal to us. He is greater. And so if we're going to be friends with Jesus, we need to recognize you're actually becoming friends with God. That's a different friendship than you have with your friends at school. It's going to be different. But one of the things that Jesus does make an essential part of this friendship, yes, obedience is part of this friendship. It absolutely is. You can't disobey Jesus and expect to be friends with Jesus. Part of the friendship, just like Israel and Rome, Israel is only going to be friends with Rome if they do what Rome says, and Rome is going to give them some harsh things to do. Jesus wants us to be friends if we do what he says. But as you keep reading here, what are the commands that Jesus is giving? He says it a bunch. He says it quite a few times in this section. Love. He starts it off in verse 12. "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you." You know what Jesus' command that we have to keep in order to be his friend is? Love one another as he has loved us. In fact, if you look there at verse 17, at the very end of that paragraph, "These things I command you, so that you will love one another." You know what Jesus is commanding them so that they will be friends? Love for one another. Being friends with Jesus not only gets you a loving relationship with Jesus, but it gets you a loving relationship with all of his friends. And it's not the type of relationship, even though he's not our equal, it's not the type of relationship where he just sees us as slaves. That's what it could sound like. If you said, hey, we'll have a relationship if you do whatever I say, you could say, well, that's the relationship of a slave. And Jesus is quite clear. That's why he says in verse 15, no longer do I call you slaves or servants. Servant doesn't know what his master's doing. Like, I am going to have a relationship with you that actually connects you to the will of God, that causes you to have love for me and me to have love for you and you to have love for one another. So this type of friendship, it is with someone far greater, and it does depend on obeying that one who's far greater. But by obeying the one who's far greater, you end up with a loving relationship with God, with him, and with one another. It's a pretty good deal for us. We should want to be friends with Jesus. Now, as you look at throughout these couple of chapters, like chapter 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17 of the Gospel of John, you'll see, I think, more fleshed out what this friendship would actually look like. And I think Jesus does a lot of things for them that are good things to do for a friend. Jesus does a lot of things for them that could teach us about how to embody his friendship and share it with others. One thing I want to say before we talk about some of those things, though, is this brings up an interesting point. The loving friendship we have with Jesus will cause us to have greater relationships with each other, with him, and with his Father. He also has that really important verse in there where it says, greater love has no man than this, than someone would lay down his life for his friends. Rome and Israel might have had something that they called a friendship at some point. Rome's not laying down its life for its friends, right? Rome isn't lovingly sacrificing itself so that Israel would benefit. Rome's not gonna pay to be friends with them. I'll be friends with you if you do what I say, and what they're going to say is selfish stuff. What Jesus says is, I'll be your friends if you do what I say, and I will cause you to have better relationships. I will give you access to my Father, and I will give my life for you in our friendship. It's a friendship like no other. It's a really good one to have. But it does bring the question, if we're going to be talking about how to be friends, there are some other passages that talk about friendship like with the world and what that looks like. We're told in James chapter 4, friendship with the world is enmity with God. We're told in John, 1 John chapter 2, that like all that's in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the boastful pride of life, these things are not from the Father. Like the world is often depicted as that which rejects God and that you should not be. It's like you have a choice. You can either be friends with God or friends with the world. But when you read the Gospel of John, the world is used interestingly. It is sometimes something that is wicked and evil and something that rejects Jesus. Like, that's the way that the word world is used. And yet, even in spite of that, you have that really, really famous verse in John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. So you get, like, the world is loved by God. The world is loved by Jesus. Jesus gives his life for the world, even though the world doesn't return that. I think you're going to see that as an example in some of the way that Jesus loves. And it brings up a question to us. Like, should we be friends with the world? And I would say there's a sense in which the answer is no. Especially if we're talking about partnership and alliance, something like that, you should not have that type of relationship with the world, where you and the world are working together for some goal. Like, worldliness will destroy you, so don't be friends with the world in that way. But I will say, I think Jesus does provide examples of being friendly to the world, of being kind to the world, of loving the people who are in the world. That's not to say you love the sin of the world, but if Christians are going to demonstrate the goodness and the love of God, then everything that I'm going to say here about friendship, it will apply to our relationship with Jesus. It'll apply to our relationship with one another. It'll apply to our relationship with the whole church, the old and the young and the male and the female, and like people who you otherwise probably wouldn't be friends with in a camping sort of way. You could be friends with in the Jesus sort of way. But I would say you could also practice all of these things towards the rest of the world, and I think in doing so, they'll learn more about what it means to be friends with Jesus. They'll learn more about the goodness of Jesus. So all of these things, I think, can be universally practiced, and you don't have to pick and choose, I'll be good to that person, not to this person. I think friendship with Jesus, one of the surprising features of it is that it's pretty universal. Jesus is going to demonstrate his friendly love to the world. In fact, it's for the world that Jesus gave up his life. It's for the world that God loved. And so, what does it mean to be friends with Jesus, and how can we live that out in our lives? Well, one thing I would say, and this is based on the idea that we just saw right there, of the word friendship and some of the unique ways Jesus uses it, I think loyalty is a part of it. I think being a friend of Jesus means we're going to be loyal to Jesus. Now, loyalty is a wonderful thing when you know that there's someone who you can count on, someone who will stick with you through thick and thin, someone who won't turn their back on you when things get hard. Woody might have been a good friend. He was not a loyal friend, because as soon as things got hard, he would turn his back on people. You know, as soon as things got hard, he wanted Buzz out of the picture. He didn't care about Andy's happiness. Like, he wasn't super loyal. I think loyalty is a really good feature in a friendship. But it does have to be a loyalty that is properly grounded in an ultimate love of God and his truth. What I mean by that is you can have loyalty to someone, but if you end up prioritizing loyalty to a person and what they do over your loyalty to God, you could find yourself being pressed in two different directions. I think the same type of thing with governments. Should you be a good citizen? Absolutely, you should be a good citizen. But what about if the government starts trying to do things that are going to pull you farther away from God? What about if the government's wanting you to deny Christ or something like that? Well, then no, you choose Christ. I think you should have that same type of loyalty in friendships, especially friendships with your brothers and sisters in Christ, where they can count on you. You will sacrifice for them. You will show that you are dependable in this relationship, that you're not going to walk out on them as soon as things get tough. I think it's helpful to have friends like that and to be a friend like that. If the friendship is leading you in a direction away from God, then your loyalty to God has to supersede that. But Jesus, I think, does demand loyalty in our friendship. And if whatever Jesus demands in the friendship, I think he gives tenfold more. It's like he's more loyal to us than we are to him. There's a reason. If you look at God and you look throughout the Old Testament, Israel constantly turned against God. And yet, you can read like the book of Judges, and it's the cycle over and over and over again of Israel turning against God and being oppressed by these foreign rulers and then crying out to God, and he saves them. But it's like over and over again, how many times is he going to take being mistreated in this friendship? Well, when you look at the beginning of the book of Judges, God is the God of Israel. And when you look at the end of the book of Judges, God is the God of Israel. He's been loyal to them throughout. You see the same thing with kings. You see the same thing when they go into Babylonian exile. Guess what? When they come out of Babylonian exile, he's still their God. And if you read the book of Daniel, he's still their God while they're in Babylonian exile. He's their God in a lion's den, and he's their God in a fiery furnace. Like, God's loyalty goes some incredible places. And I think there's something beautiful and valuable about that when it comes to what makes a friendship last and endure. Loyalty is a part of that. I also think love and service is a part of that. This whole conversation with his disciples that Jesus has, it's several chapters long. If you go back to the beginning of it in chapter 13, he talks about how he has loved them to the uttermost. And one of the last things that he wanted to do was demonstrate what it means to love someone. And he demonstrates his love for him by getting on his hands and knees, getting a towel and a bowl, and washing the feet of those disciples who were there. That is ordinarily a job preserved or left for a slave. Usually it's a low-ranking slave, and it's usually a female slave. And yet what you see Jesus doing is taking that role for himself that would have been something that was dishonorable. As a matter of fact, if you remember what happens when he gets to Peter, Peter's like, "Nuh-uh, you will never wash my feet." And Jesus says, "If I don't wash you, you have no part with me." And I think there's probably, like so much in the Gospel of John, I think there's a double meaning there, where the cleansing and the washing that Jesus offers is actually part of having a part, a fellowship, a place with him. But what he says to Peter is that this is actually an essential part of our relationship and our friendship, this act of service. And he ends it by saying, like, if the teacher has done this for you, you ought to be doing this for one another. In fact, you read that same chapter, he goes towards the end of chapter 13, he says, "A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you." A couple of things are interesting about that idea of calling love a new commandment. Because you can read the Old Testament and you'll see love. love's not particularly new. Like, it's existed for a long time, and God's expected it for a long time, and they were supposed to love their neighbor as themselves. Like, so it's not new in the sense that God is saying love. But I think that phrase, love one another as I have loved you, provides a depth and kind of a radical nature to this love that makes it unlike anything you've ever seen. It's that love which is why God incarnate gets on his hands and knees and washes their feet. That's something that has never been seen before. It's that love where God incarnate goes to a cross and dies for his friends. That's a love that has never been seen or experienced prior to that or since that. There is something unique and special about the depth and gravity of this love. And Jesus says, that's actually the type of love. That's how I want people to know you're my disciples. Because you have a love that doesn't look like the rest of the world's love. You have a love that transcends and is deeper and is more powerful than that. Woody's love lasted as long as till he got Buzz, you know? Our love is supposed to look like Christ's love that would ultimately take you to an act of service. It would ultimately take you to an act of giving your life and love for someone else. Like, that's what we are called to. And again, that's a radical kind of love. One of the things you also see about that is when you think about who was there, like, every one of those people that Jesus is washing their feet is going to abandon him, except for maybe that you could say the beloved disciple. And then you have Peter, who's going to deny him. And do you know who's still there at that time? Judas. Judas leaves right after that. You know what just happened to Judas when he went and betrayed Jesus? His feet were just, like, they were probably still damp as he was standing there betraying the Lord, the one who just got on his hands and knees and washed his feet. That's a pretty radical kind of love, right? And that's one of the reasons why I say that the things we see in Jesus, I think they can be practiced towards anyone. You can love and serve anybody. And in doing so, you'll recognize that the God that we serve and worship is a God who can love and does love anybody to the point, to the extent that he'll wash the feet of a betrayer and die for every sinner alive. That's a radical kind of love. And that's what it means to be a friend of God. And that is, I think, something that we could probably learn from in our friendships with one another and in our friendships with the rest of the church and in the friendships that we have. Another thing that you see in these chapters, you see loyalty and you see loving service, but you also see encouragement. There's something that Jesus tells his disciples several times, which is, don't be discouraged. Or in John chapter 14 and verse 1, let not your heart be troubled. Then he'll tell them things that will be a source of encouragement to them. He's about to go, like he's about to die and leave them. And he wants to leave them with some encouragement. So he gives them promises about the home that he is preparing for them, that their relationship can endure and that they'll be together again in the house of God, right? That's a pretty grand idea. He gives them encouragement about the persecution that they're going to face and how they'll be able to overcome through him. He gives them encouragement about the fact that he's about to die. And he says, it will be hard. It'll be like a woman giving birth. In the midst of the labor pains, it is miserable and agonizing and painful. But after that, when you're holding the newborn child in your hands, like there's a joy that comes with that. He says that's what the next couple of days are going to be like through the death and resurrection. But those are encouraging words to help them through the darkness. He promises the Holy Spirit to them, saying, I'm not going to leave you as orphans. I'm not going to leave you alone. God's presence will be with you guys. And through each of these things, he's taking them in a period of sorrow and darkness, and he's being an encourager to them. And I think if you want to be a good friend, look for ways to encourage. Look for ways to be a source of positivity and help in the life of someone who's going through something difficult. And finally, I would say one of the last things Jesus does in this meeting, this is John 17, and it's something that is an essential part of any relationship. If you're going to get married, do this. If you're going to have children, do this. If you're going to have relationships with the church, do this. If you're going to be friends with someone, do this. And that is prayer. John 17, the last chapter, is a chapter that records this prayer that Jesus has. And he prays for his disciples, and he prays for the people who will believe in their word. He prays about what he's about to endure. But he offers prayer for them. And I think there are several things that are really important about prayer when it comes to our friendships and relationships with one another. Is one, if you want to know what to pray to God about on behalf of someone else, you should probably be talking to that person. If you want to pray for someone, like, it encourages you to talk to that person and find out what's going on in their life so that you can pray for them and they can pray for you. Like, mutual prayer, beautiful part of a friendship. So see if that's something you can work into your friendships and your relationships. Talk to each other about what's going on in your lives and how you can pray for one another. There are a lot of things that people go through. And there are times when, like, someone else is going through something, and I've never gone through that type of thing at all. And it seems completely foreign to me what they're enduring. Something that can help us is when we take something that otherwise we would never think about or we've never experienced, and we make that become an active part of our conversations with God. It demonstrates, I think, a love for that person. I think it demonstrates a sympathy or an empathy towards what they're experiencing. And also, I think it's just the type of thing that it helps us put our lives in perspective. One example that I've used before is in marriages. You know, sometimes husbands and wives, sometimes they fight. You know, sometimes they have arguments and things like that. It just happens. But something that's a wonderful practice is every single night, you take your wife by the hand and you say a prayer. Even on the nights where you're not happy with each other. Even at the times you're having a disagreement. Even at the times when there's stress. And I'll say, if you're in the midst of an argument and you stop and you do that, it does help put that argument back in perspective. I would say the same thing if you have a friend. Sometimes friends are going to butt heads. You know, sometimes friends aren't always going to get along. You'll have some times where the friendship seems great, sometimes when the friendship seems not that great. But something that can help keep it in perspective and help you realize and remember the value of it is make prayer a part of your friendship. We live in a world where I think that might be seen as a cheesy thing to do, but it's not. It's a valuable thing, and it's a beautiful thing, and it's an eternal thing, and it's something that can connect you to God. In fact, all of our friendships that we have, if we want them to be valuable, that should be the mission, to make them friendships about God. Whether it's a friendship you have with someone in the world, make that friendship about God and about service to God and about having a godly impact on that person. If you're talking about friendships in the church, make those God-centered friendships. And that's, again, the example that we see in Christ. He is the friend who brings you closer to God. He is the friend who, well, through your friendship with him, connects you to God. And he's the friend who encourages you to love one another and love him. So being a friend of God is different than being a friend of anyone else, but it's something that he offers to every person here. I have had relationships, like in friendships, and I've known people, and I've been to school, and I've, and you know what? Some people, I've come to realize, and this is going to shock everyone here, there are some people who don't want to be my friend. I think that I am one of the swellest guys you'll ever meet, but there are people who don't agree, and I don't know how, but there are people who don't want to be your friend. Sometimes it can be hard to have a friend. Sometimes it can be lonely. But I tell you who will always want to be your friend, and it matters more than anybody else, is through Christ, God says to you, you have a friend in me. And you can become friends of God tonight. You can name Christ as the Lord of your life. You can have your sins washed away in baptism. You can be born again to a new life, new relationships, a new friendship that will be something that provides value, meaning, and significance to your life now and even through death and even on into eternity and the age to come. And if we could help you do that, we would love for you to let that be known. If you would, please come and sit on the front row while we stand and as we sing.